Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It's Happy New Year, everyone. It's 10 a.m. on January 9th, 2024. And time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners, Bradford Logan, President of the Commission. To my right is Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President. To my left is Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary. Joining us today is John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Paul Willenbrock, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board. Virtually joining us is Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and we have Morgan Stoltzman, Deputy Clerk of the Board here today. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with community staff. Our first item is item one, our CEO General Manager briefing and planning session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioner Logan. Happy New Year to all. Lots of good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get right at it with our media update and our own Aaron Sweeney. Good morning, Aaron.
Morning.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Aaron Sweeney, Media Public Relations Specialist 3. Good to be here this morning. I wish I had all set to wear all my UW gear and everything today. Decided against that. But we'll get right into it. I wanted to really point this out. This is a great article from Paul Roberts. He's a former Everett City Councilman. We've worked really closely with him on this article. He's doing a series called Economics, where he's really getting into climate change and ecological stuff, sustainability. And he wanted to talk about us, which we were like, great. So Brenda White, Alex Corey, myself sat down with him and really went over kind of all the things we're doing. I thought the piece was fantastic. You know, went over our supply, how we're growing in demand, went into AMI, workforce development, all that stuff. Yeah. So really, I thought the piece turned out fantastic. And it's a credit to Brenda for helping set it up and Alex for really providing a lot of that information.
Great piece.
He's a wonderful environmentalist.
He is, and great writer.
Oh,
really good.
Really great one, yes.
And he knows his stuff. I mean, he had some really good questions for us, and so it was really good to just sit down and chat with him, and he really wants to shine a light on all the amazing stuff that we're doing here. Next up was kind of an interesting situation that happened the other day, and I wanted to shine a light on some of the folks that we have out this time of year when we have outages like this. This was an outage that happened in downtown Everett, kind of a strange circumstance. It was about 10:30, 11 at night. You know, I'm on call, so I get pages and things like that, and this came in from Cairo and a couple other media places. And I just wanted to give a shout out to our Energy Control Center. They were right on the ball, gave me tons of information to give to the media and allowed me to really, communicate what was going on in the situation. My Everett News really reported kind of another strange part of the situation where a gentleman was basically banging on a control part of equipment. They thought that might have been part of the outage. But another great thing was Troy Hogstead was on the site and he was able to, say it had nothing to do with that. We were able to report on that and then get a correction in the story and all that. So it's one of those things where there's just kind of misinformation out there. And it's our job to kind of, change the narrative on that, make sure they know they got the right information. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Energy Control and Paige Olson's team for all the work that they do and how responsive they are.
Yeah, good work. Please send my thanks. I was in power outage blip.
Yeah.
Like every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
Were you banging on a piece of equipment?
I know better.
Just a quick roundup of some other stuff. We are monthly column in the Herald last month was on our energy gift giving guide. We do that annually, just kind of shine a light on some of the conservation gift ideas that folks can do, point to our marketplace, things like that, that do have some fun other kind of gift ideas. And then Chris Bridges' team worked with Utility Analytics Institute and a freelance writer to do a story on kind of all the work that they've done, kind of how they've done homegrown. How their team has worked really hard to do something that a lot of utilities have consultants and major teams do this. They've done it kind of homegrown and they shine a light on it. They did a good job on this one. In publications, we've got The Wire coming out. The January Wire is really celebrating our 75th year. You're going to hear a lot about that this year. We've got an external campaign, internal campaign, where we'll be talking a lot about 75 years. Each month, we're going to be talking about a decade. So as we go through to September, when September 1st is actually our birthday, each month we'll be talking about the 30s and 40s was this first one. Then we'll do the 50s, 60s, 70s. So you'll get this kind of holistic look of how each decade we made major strides and progress. So that should be really fun. And then we also, in The Wire, pointed out Slade Wills and all the work he was doing and had a note about our budget approval and connect up some more notes on that. And then just a little more on our 75th. Like I said, we're doing tons of work on that. Wendy Paris, Kelsey Wiebe on our team have done a great job with the design of the t-shirt, the logo, posters. We've got all these historical photos that you're going to see a ton of this year. David Kruger is doing all the writing for the kind of the monthly historical decade look backs. And so you'll be hearing tons about that. And we're also doing a prize giveaway for our customers. So each month we'll do a prize drawing of $75, and that'll culminate in September with a drawing of $750. So very exciting. We've already opened it up for January. We already have about 250 folks who have entered. Wow. So.
Is that employee? The 75?
The customers. Yeah, employees actually can't win. No. Just customers. Employer.
And I said you have to be able to scale up. A really nice logo.
It is a really nice
logo. Who designed that?
Kelsey Wiebe did. Kelsey Wiebe, she's our new designer. Yeah.
Yeah, really nice. And the t-shirt is great, especially for those who are 75 years old. I can wear it.
It really kind of is a throwback, too.
That's a good number.
It's kind of a throwback to our, kind of our old logo with the lightning bolt and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Ready Kilowatt.
Yeah.
Remember Ready Kilowatt?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it actually used to be out in the South parking lot. That was the old parking lot, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be a huge lightning bolt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
No, not cool. Really stupid.
Oh, okay. Well, this looks a lot better, right? All right, that's it for me.
Control, any questions for Aaron?
Good job. I have done great work. I enjoyed reading all about this.
Perfect. Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah,
thank love you. The t-shirt design.
Excellent. Thank you, Aaron. Next up is a start of our 2024 legislative session. And Ryan Collins is going to give us an update on all the happenings. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Happy New Year. For the record, this is Ryan Collins, the district's State Government Relations and External Affairs Specialist 3. It's that time of year again, the beginning of the state legislative session, and I'm here to provide you with a quick session preview to kick off 2024. For the purpose of this presentation is to provide context to the 2024 legislative session. This is for informational purposes only. Today, we will review the Snohomish PUD Government Relations Guiding Principles, provide background and context for the upcoming session, highlight some themes government relations predicts will run through the session. I'll then quickly touch upon Governor Inslee's budget, and then round out with how I plan to report to Commission for the short session. As always, I'm leaving time at the end for any questions commissioners may have, but please feel free to jump in at any time. Just to quickly start, I wanted to revisit Snohomish PUD's state legislative principles. As a reminder, we have 5 state legislative principles that serve as the guardrails for our state government relations engagement. Those principles are reliability of service, government relations values our public power heritage and will protect the PUD's ability to provide safe and reliable power and water. Affordability, government relations will similarly protect the PUD's ability to provide power and water at the lowest reasonable costs. Community safety, government relations will prioritize the safety of our employees and communities above all else. Local control, government relations will protect our governing body's local control. And finally, environmental stewardship. Government relations values our natural environment and will take our stewardship responsibilities seriously. Headed into 2024 means that we're in the second half of the biennium. As a quick recap, the biennium is split between a long 105-day session in the first year of the biennium and a 60-day short session for the second year. we're entering that second short year session. Where the primary task of the legislature this year is to adopt a supplemental budget. The makeup of the legislature is like last year, with Democrats in control of both chambers with a 9-seat majority in the Senate and an 18-seat majority in the House. There have been several notable changes at the committee leadership level, as well as the House Republican leadership since last session. Senator June Robinson, who represents the Everett area, became the chair of the important Senate Ways and Means Committee and will be a principal voice in deciding that supplemental budget, as well as Representative Mike Steele, who was elected over the interim by his colleagues, become the minority deputy leader, which means that he'll be managing the House Republicans' overall legislative efforts. Notably, this year, 2024, is also Governor Inslee's last and final legislative session as governor. As I mentioned earlier, this is a 60-day session. The session kicked off yesterday on January 8th and is slated to end on March 7th. There are important, quote-unquote, cutoff dates between now and March 7th when legislation needs to move beyond certain stages to remain alive. The first major cutoff for your guys' attention is on January 31st, when bills need to be passed out of their policy, their respective policy committees. As a fun little note, State Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, put it correctly in a recent news article that a short session is a lot like a rodeo. It's fast, quick, and intense. Given the time constraints of 60 days, the capacity for major policy bills is significantly more challenging. Hence why we typically see smaller tweaks to state laws and other fixes around the margins. Whether this session follows that trend is yet to be determined, so I want to remind the Commission that all the bills submitted during the 2023 session last year are still alive for the 2024 session this year. And just as a note, just looking at this morning, I noted that there's about 1,000 new proposals that were introduced, pre-filed, and within the last couple of days on top of what was introduced last year. Finally, for me, this is more real than anything else, is life down in Olympia. It's beginning to resemble a new normal. Committees have fully adjusted to hybrid testimony, and members have adjusted to returning to in-person caucus meetings and chamber votes. The campus still remains quieter than before the pandemic, with some member offices only taking virtual meetings, although that's still led to the offices themselves.
The parking has improved. Maybe.
Parking has improved dramatically, which is great. So, what are we seeing in terms of kind of some of the big themes that we're viewing for this session? Let's start within the climate and energy space. In 2024, there are several external factors influencing decision-making ahead of the session. One is statewide efforts to maximize inflation reduction funds for the state. Another is a need to align state statute to integrate with federal requirements written into the state's various grant applications to the federal government. And last, updating several requirements to better implement recently passed laws such as the Climate Commitment Act and the Clean Energy Transformation Act. Like previous years, we anticipate a continued focus on clean energy, and in particular solar, both residential and commercial scale, discussions around building programs and providing funding to support low-income customers, as well as proposals promoting more energy efficiency and conservation programs to help boost the energy transition. What may complicate all these are several initiatives that could be placed on November's ballot. Importantly, any one of these initiatives that receives enough validated signatures could be addressed by the legislature first. Of key importance to the Commission are two proposals, one that would repeal the Climate Commitment Act and another that would repeal capital gains tax. Both laws have raised significant funds for the state and have been folded into the budgetary decisions for this session. The repeal could drastically alter decisions in the future, as well as upend major components of the state's climate policy efforts. While the initiative's futures are uncertain, this is something to track and will continue to do so, whether or not the legislature decides to act upon them. Of course, climate and energy policy are not the only things that we are following. We also track several other areas that could impact the policy changes and that could be impacted by policy changes this session. I wanted to provide a quick broad look at the emerging themes we were hearing about in Olympia, such as workforce, transportation, and housing, as well as technology. At this point, it's too soon to tell if these issues will gain traction or if there will be a need for closer review by the district. However, we'll be sure to keep you guys posted if they do. Lastly, I wanted to touch upon Governor Inslee's budget proposal that he released back in December. His proposal doesn't reflect what the legislature will ultimately do, but it does help create a baseline of expectations, as well as lay out some of his priorities that he would like to see in his final year. The four big areas of his focus are on housing and homelessness, behavioral health, addressing climate change, and environmental and habitat preservation. I think it's fair to say that we can expect several of these top line issues to be shared by many in the legislature, although they may differ on how to address them. Finally, I wanted to quickly update the commission on how I anticipate to report to you this session. Key legislation reports will be provided to the commission at every meeting through the session, and I will be able to provide in-person presentations at every other meeting. As always, I'll be available to answer questions any of you may have in person or virtually during off sessions or off meetings. I also wanted to highlight an effort that government relations undertook during the interim. In our ongoing efforts to make our reporting more valuable, we gathered feedback and questions from commission over the past several years and adjusted our format for our key legislation report. The substance should stay the same. The substance and information report should stay the same. However, we hope that this new format will make it easier to read and understand, as well as make it more consistent from report to report. I'll be introducing that new format to you in the next week. And with that, I'll open up for questions. Any questions?
I think it's really heavy, but I thoroughly enjoyed that. I have a lot of questions in my mind that they're not ready for.
No problem.
I do wonder about the board that approves, like whether builders will be required to have heat pumps instead of gas. Is that still on hold?
So you're referring to the State Building Code Council.
The State Building Code Council.
So they did revise their more recent updates to the Building Code Council in response to the court cases that just were settled down in California.
Okay.
There have been tweaks to that, I think, again, to kind of mitigate some of the concerns that were raised during the California case.
Yeah.
And that is moving forward.
Thank you.
No problem.
I have no questions.
I have no questions here. Thank you,
Brian. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'll be back in a couple weeks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Great job. Next up is an update on our broadband study, third party use of district owned dark fiber, from Nick Johnston. Morning, Nick.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
My name's Nick Johnston. I'm telecom communication, or the manager of telecom here at the district. And today I'm here to talk about the broadband study, specifically the third-party use of district-owned dark fiber. So the purpose of the day is an informational session. We'll be going over just kind of the background of the changes we're proposing. And then in the next session, I will be requesting your consideration to approve a resolution. So we're going to go over the broadband study and kind of where we left off last. And we're going to jump into district our fiber network, kind of highlight what we touched on last time. We're going to go over the history of dark fiber, third-party usage of dark fiber here in the district. And then we're going to jump into actually what we're proposing on changing today. And then we're going to look forward to how that fits into our overall response to the study, and then specifically what we're going to ask you on the next session here. So I mentioned that we're picking off where the broadband study left off last year in December 13th of 2022, which was a while ago. And in doing so, we actually put this slide directly from that presentation. So, if you remember, we left off with a conclusion that there was no responsible way for the district to utilize its existing fiber network or to build a new fiber network. The crux of that is that we're trying to maintain that we stick with our core function of providing power and water, and we felt like anything that we did with our existing fiber structure or building out new would jeopardize that. But we did identify that we could bolster our existing approach towards passive infrastructure, including dark fiber, how we manage requests for usage of our properties like towers and buildings and things like that. And we came up with a couple items that we could actually have action on. The first one was taking a look at some resolutions that allowed us from having third-party usage of our dark fiber. And that's specifically what we're talking about today. We also looked at how we can improve how we communicate our passive infrastructure and how people can actually engage the district in doing that. And then we also wanted to develop a framework in that we can quickly make decisions on whether or not it was good for the district to enter into these agreements. That's a lot, so we wanted to kind of pick it off line by line instead of just coming together with everything all at once. So today we're talking about the first item there, which is making it so we can actually enter into these agreements again on our dark fiber. And in light of a continual improvement mindset, you notice that we actually crossed out where we thought we were going to do, and when we looked at it, we figured out that we needed to switch gears. And the resolution 5606 that disallowed third-party usage of our fiber, we thought we could just quickly repeal that and be allowed to do it again. When we looked into it a little bit closer, there are a lot of items on there that we couldn't just repeal it. We had to actually itemize that list. And that also kind of highlighted that we can't just quickly answer this. We need to make sure that we're spending our time, we're doing our due diligence, and we're really looking into this to make sure that any decisions we make today aren't going to have long-lasting effects or negative impacts to the district. So that's why we're kind of piecemealing this, why we're just coming with the third-party use of dark fiber today. So since we're talking about dark fiber, let's take a look at our actual dark fiber network here. The important realization that we made in the last in the broadband study was that our fiber network is purpose-built. It does a really good job of what it was designed to do, and that's to provide data transport between our substations and our offices, and specifically our energy control center. And that provides supervisory control and data acquisition, or SCADA, which is, yes?
What do the colors represent?
So it's really difficult to put our fiber network for the whole district with all of our 100 and some substations on a single slide. It's really difficult to see, but this is actually a picture we were trying to go through and highlight the core fiber and the distribution fiber.
So the green represents
fiber. The green is more distribution fiber and the red is core. And this isn't set. We'll get into the details, and that's probably another session where we'll jump into that.
Yeah, I was just wondering why there wasn't a little about.
Yeah, and this is just a screenshot from one of the systems that we use to manage the network. So like I mentioned, it's purpose-built, and it provides SCADA transport to our substations. That's what allows us to collect data from our network and also remotely operate that. So it saves on end time to go out and actually collect that data and also to operate switches and things like that in the network. It allows us to respond quickly to outages. It protects our equipment by allowing faults to trigger both sides to trip that section of the network out. And prior to our fiber, we used a combination of radio and then also leaf circuits that really weren't reliable. So back in 2008, we put an emphasis on building out our fiber network under our substation reliability program. And in doing so, we made a lot of decisions that were specific to making sure that this met the purpose. And everything from how we routed the fiber, what size fiber we used, where we put it, construction methods, things like that, we made specifically to ensure that it was a robust network, that it met the need. But a lot of times those decisions didn't make it a good network for providing broadband to customers. That's really what we found out in our study. So it has limited capacity. It doesn't, it's not very close to the end user customers if it were to be used as a broadband network, but it serves our needs very well. So at the district, we do have a history of licensing third-party usage of our dark fiber starting back in 1998. That was in response to a few entities requesting information on dark fiber and asking us to actually enter into lease agreements. Specifically, our area has a kind of a geological break in it, in between Everett and Marysville, the Delta, and that's a very difficult spot to build. When we were looking at providing our fiber over that Delta, there was limited availability. It's a navigable waterway, so you can't just continue to string fiber lower and lower. There's a lot of limitations on that. So it was kind of a one and done bill.
Question on that, because I always thought that fiber was included in that when we built the line across the deal.
It was, but we identified that we basically only had one shot at it. Most of our other builds, we reserve communication space that we can lease to other entities like Ziply or any of those. But with this one, we identified that there was only one shot. So instead of just providing our need and moving on, we actually sized those fibers, all those different decisions that I mentioned when we were building on our network, we kind of shifted gears a little bit. So we sized the fiber appropriately. We made sure that it was accessible by third-party usage. And that kind of kicked off our ability to lease, or to license the ability to use dark fiber. Over the next 14 years, before the next big change, we entered in a few leases or license agreements with third-party entities, including Verizon, which has since expired. We have Milnet, Snohomish County, and a few others that leave up there for now. But in 2012, we kind of looked at it, and there is a disadvantage to having third-party entities on our fiber. And it makes it a little bit more difficult to manage. If we have to rearrange our fiber network, if there's a storm damage or something like that, it's another entity that we have to coordinate with. And it kind of slows down how we manage our network. It's a minor disadvantage, but when we looked at how many third-party interests we actually had, it was really, really limited. So I think the decision at the time was, it wasn't in the district's best interest to continue on with this license agreement. In the one small difference there, recently in 2021, we did have Resolution 5606 that in place, which didn't allow us to license use, but we had a small section of fiber between our Jackson facility and the Everett water facility. And that was kind of a joint use. It was in the best interest for both entities, so we asked for an exception in that case. But as of today, we still have Resolution 5606 in place that doesn't allow us to enter into these third-party agreements. Looking back at our broadband study, we identified this as a potential area that we can kind of switch gears on. In 2012, when we made the decision to disallow it, we didn't have the broadband in place. That need wasn't there. So without that need being there, it was a pretty good decision for the district to disallow these third-party usages. But now that's kind of changed a little bit. So if you kind of put that together and you look at why we changed there, and then you might look at our network and say, well, you just said that's a really bad usage and it doesn't really go with broadband. The fact is we don't know what we don't know. And we don't think it's responsible for us to put any more time and effort and resources into trying to find usage for our fiber network to meet these broadband needs. But there's entities out there that are working on that. And we want to make sure that we're open to that and we're not the limiting factor for them. And this is one small step that we can do to make sure that we meet that need.
So in 2021, that agreement with Everett, does that provide citywide broadband?
No, this is, they have a facility up just north of our Jackson facility. And, it's a reservoir up there.
Sure.
And we had an agreement to provide backbone transport, and we used a combination of our radio network and a copper cable that we shared. That copper cable was degrading, and the radio network was no longer used. So when we replaced the copper cable, we put fiber in, and then we just moved that services over to the So that's why it's a little bit different than like a Wave broadband or Verizon or something like that coming and asking for use of our fiber. So I know that's a lot of background. We're picking up where we left off, but specifically to what we're talking about today, Sean Aronow in our legal services has drafted up a resolution that will amend 5606 to remove section one from there, which will allow us to accept applications and enter into lease license agreements. And the other component of that is we needed to reenact our actual fee schedule to make sure that if we do get to a point where we're entering into an agreement that we have an ability to recoup costs on that. So the last time that we touched the joint use fee schedule was under Resolution 6146. So this this resolution will amend 6146 to add that fee schedule back in. It's important to look at what this does not do. We're not advocating building fiber to suit. We're not thinking this is going to open up the floodgates. Again, looking back to 14 years where we allowed third-party use to when we disallowed it, we only had, I think it was three agreements that we entered into. So we don't anticipate this being a huge floodgate moment. We're not going to build out to other entities. The other important part is when we do enter into those agreements, we'll be bringing them in front of you as well. So we're going to look at each individual agreement, just like we did in the past.
So are all of the third parties, corporations or companies like Xfinity, Ziply, and those?
We had Wave and Verizon. Those are kind of considered, you know, providers of broadband services. Snohomish County, everyone's entity, and then NOAANet is another. NOAANet? NOAANet. Yeah. And actually, I can get back to you on the, I don't want to get
that's
that
right.
Wrong.
No,
but there it is.
That's okay.
Okay.
Many of the PUDs are members of NOAANet.
Yeah.
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 So essentially organization.
Yep. They try to use government-owned fiber to provide services to usually just government entities. They have expanded a little bit beyond that, but they are a pretty big player in the broadband provider and alternative broadband. So like I was saying, this isn't going to open up the floodgates. You will have the opportunity to look at each license agreement as they come up or when they come up. So yeah, that's the basic of what we're talking about, that step one. So we're going to look back on our action plan. We revised that step one to, instead of getting rid of 5606, we're going to actually amend it. Next, we're looking at either a continual improvement program or just looking at the way that we manage our joint use telecom agreements. In that, we're going to finalize our Wave Broadband Dark Fiber. We presented that, I think it was back in October to you. One of the key pieces why we couldn't execute that is because 5606 is still in place. So when we amend that and we put the fee schedule back in, we'll be able to finalize that fiber agreement with Wave. The other thing that we're going to do is take a look at our fee schedule and compare it with our peers. We've already started this. A preliminary look at it is really good. We're still in line with our peers, even though we hadn't touched the our fee schedule since 1998. It's also in line with our current agreement. So we had escalation clauses in the current agreements, and those have escalated over the years, but that still puts the fee that they're paying within our fee schedule. So we're comfortable just putting that old fee schedule back in place, but we are going to take another look at it to make sure that it's going to provide good function in the future. And then we're also going to take a look at how we manage the documents and how we propose those documents to the public and make it available to the public. The final section on there that we want to take a look at is we want to make sure that we're using the best resources possible and we're not expending a whole bunch of resources on these requests. And one thing that we can do to help with that is developing a decision-making framework so that we're not independently, every time something comes in, trying to figure out what we can do again.
Thank you.
So that's kind of the next steps. Again, today we're focused on a resolution amending 5606 and 6146 to allow third-party usage of dark fiber. And the next time we talk, hopefully, the next commission meeting, we'll be asking your consideration to approve that resolution.
I don't, thank you.
Very good. I have a couple. I think you kind of covered them. So therefore, there will be unique regulations, that basic regulations that will apply to all third-party.
We do have a standard third-party master license agreement.
Okay.
And then under that, we have fiber license agreement, similar to we have a master license agreement and site license agreement for other joint use.
Yeah.
We do intend to take a look at that to make sure, like I mentioned, when we have third party on our fiber, it's difficult to make changes and to notify them. That's one of the key areas that we can look at to make sure that those concerns are met. We're pretty comfortable with our license agreement right now, but there are areas for
improvement. Okay. My shorthand here is,
Exit criteria. Is there a way of getting me a hypothetical? Don't you just love that word, it's NBC? That's my new word for the year. A hypothetical example. Because I always kind of look at how it's going to work.
In terms of why they'd be interested in, like, or an agreement?
Well, an interest in what we, in general terms, might end up with. I'm assuming there's base regs, and then based upon individual situation, you're going to have to be able to do some modifications.
We're not looking to do modifications in whole. A good example is the city of Everett fiber. We had an excess capacity, that's number one, as we don't want to be giving away fiber that we're intending to use later on. So we have to make sure that we have excess capacity. And I bring up the city of Everett because that was a prime example. Getting back to that picture, that was in green because it was a distribution area. Okay. It's not part of our core. We don't have a lot of circuits out there, so we have a lot of excess capacity. So we identified excess capacity. The next step was, how do we actually connect city of Everett? So we worked with the city of Everett on saying, here's our demarcation point. We're responsible for everything to the field side, or to the source side of this fiber splice, and you're responsible for everything from the splice into the building. We worked with them on specking out the fiber, and then kind of the intricacies of who does the actual splice, who does the testing. All of that's actually spelled out in our license agreement, and we actually take a test, end-to-end test of what we're licensing as a benchmark. So that way, if anything comes up and that fiber degrades or there's any issues with that, we can go back and say, well, this is what we agreed upon, and it's still functioning or it isn't functioning, and the district needs to go out and do some fixes. Is that kind of...
So the regs, in terms of, there's a, in terms of exposure for the utility liability, you said once it goes into a their system, or once it steps down to the home, they're responsible?
So this is dark fiber. Okay. It's basically, they're responsible for the equipment. We're not advocating, and we're not interested in putting in our own equipment and dropping off circuits. That's where you get more into the difficulty of who's responsible for what.
Okay.
Dark fiber is more similar to like a conduit. Put something on one side and it comes out the other.
Well, Tony's always looking at PV liability and exposure. I think I'm hearing what I wanted to hear. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
I have a question. So when we install new fiber, are we installing additional capacity? So knowing that there may be future users, especially if it's in a corridor where that would make sense.
We are in some cases. A good example is the cable that we're going out to Hat Island. We need fiber in there to basically control both ends of that and provide a little bit more visibility on the end. That's only a small few fibers. And they don't make, generally, you don't put fiber in one or two. You try to put it in bundles of 12 or 24 and things like that. So the fiber or the cable construction in that case is allowing us to put more fiber in there. So that's a good case where we can put fiber in. We generally standardize on 36 and 72. And the reason for that is that construction methodology uses the same outside diameter. And that allows us to simplify our deployment. So our line doesn't have to pick between multiple different kind of components. They can just pick the same component regardless of that. So we will make the decision between 36 and 72 pretty easily. But there are one-off cases in different areas of the network where we may look at it, like the Delta crossing, where we identify that there's minimal availability for other entities to go across that. So in that case, we did size it up and make it a little bit easier for companies. And we are interested in that kind of construction methodology.
So I know there's a county broadband access team that I think are there corridors that are especially challenging in our county or in Camino that it would be worth partnering to put a higher capacity cable? Or do we essentially have most of the fiber in that we need?
For our need, we have most of it. We do have a couple sections we are looking to build out, but for the most part, we're almost 100% to our substations. As we build out, you know, again, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
So making sure that we can enter into these agreements and we continue conversations with Snohomish County Broadband Access Team and things like that. That's the avenue where those questions will pop up, and then we'll look at it at that time. And it's not the most responsible thing for us to actively go out and pursue that.
Right. One other thing, I'm just curious for reliability. Do we hang most of our fiber on our poles, or do we bury it all? Or
most fiber is actually up in the supply space. And it's proven to be really resilient. Oftentimes, when you look at pictures of trees falling into the line, it's typically the conductors that break and the fiber's holding it up. It's a really redundant build. Being a public utility and having access to the supply space gives us kind of a unique area. So we don't have to get down with the other communication entities.
So I'm just interested. I'm curious.
We do underground though as well.
What did you call the space?
Supply space.
Supply. Okay, I thought you said spy.
Oh, no, supply space. Yeah.
Oh,
don't
go there. Supply.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Any follow-up questions, Commissioner?
No, I have none.
Thank you. One. Cost of service, is that one of the base regs?
I think I understand, but can you elaborate a little bit more on the cost?
Well, the cost may be greater to a small third party than it is to somebody like Verizon or whatever. Does that apply?
We have to be equal to all parties that come and ask for, whether it's joint use or attaching to a tower, attaching to the side of a building. We have to be fair across the board. We can't play favorites.
All right.
I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Thank you. Great job, Nick. Thank you.
Anything else this morning, John?
That should do it.
Okay. It is now 10:42. And the board will recess into executive session, discuss performance of a public employee under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act. It's anticipated the executive session will last approximately 60 minutes and conclude at 11:42. Thank you for easy math. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission room at 1:30 p.m.